Hello, Silver City and Grant County. You are listening to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. You can tune into Earth Matters every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. on 89.1 FM, as well as listen to podcasts of each show on gmcr.org. This is what your community radio looks like and sounds like. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection, restoration, and continued enjoyment of New Mexico's wild lands and wilderness areas, especially our beloved Gila. On today's program, we are joined by Dr. Dale Zimmerman, Professor Emeritus of Botany at Western New Mexico University, Raven Myers, a student of entomology, Mark Cantrell, owner of Lone Mountain Natives and Restoration, Carol Fugali, project manager for Butterfly Way, a habitat enhancement project at the Gila River Farm in Cliff, New Mexico, and Patrice Muchnick, directing fundraising, raising awareness and promoting conservation in memory of her daughter, Ella Jazz Kirk, as well as Ella Myers and Michael Mall. Welcome to Earth Matters, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, yeah. So, nice, cold, windy, chilly, rainy morning here in Silver City. It's fantastic having all that rain. Can you guys just give us a sort of brief background on what Project Butterfly Way is for our listeners?
Well, our first initiative began a couple of months ago in February. I had generated some funds in memory of my daughter, Ella Jazz, and our initial impetus was to keep the Gila River free. I got together with some friends, and we decided that we wanted to do something in honor of Ella Jazz and Ella Myers and Michael Mall. And we decided that to honor their commitment to bettering the world, that we would create something that had some lasting beauty. And one of our ideas was to increase the biodiversity of an area that they loved very much. And the Gila River Farm along the Gila and Cliff was a place that they loved and visited many times. So we decided to take on a project there.
And so is this a project that's in collaboration with like other organizations like the Nature Conservancy, other groups like the Gila Conservation Coalition? Are they involved?
Yes. We are a 501c insofar as the Gila Conservation Coalition is our financial helper. And the Nature Conservancy has allowed us to do the project on their property. And the beauty of that is that we are able to start. And with the vision that we had and the friends in the valley that knew and loved our children, we were able to get a go-ahead to have an agreement very quickly between our informal organization of family and friends and the TNC and then GCC to help us with the fundraising aspects. So that's the three groups, family and friends, TNC and GCC.
And I do think that one important component of this project is because it is on the Nature Conservancy property, anyone can go and visit anytime they want. And it's a beautiful place to just go to visit the river. There's a beautiful pond there. And, of course, with the habitat restoration project that we are pursuing right now, anybody can go there at their free will.
And so I'm kind of curious what the scale is of this project, like how many acres, if you guys have a sense of that, or do you plan to expand it? Is there a dream to make it larger? Or so what does it kind of look like right now? What's the ultimate goal sort of down the line?
Well, Nathan, the initial hope is to start small and we'll see where things spread from there. I'm not sure of the exact acreage of the area that we're working on because it's an area that goes adjacent to an old access road. I suppose it would probably come down to maybe 3/4 to 1/2 acre at this point.
Okay.
Being that it's on Nature Conservancy land, we would hope that things would spread naturally through seeds and whatnot from the plants that we'll put there. And the hope is that we can expand this project over time. We'll just have to see how things work out once we get past this first phase.
Part of the reason for picking the site was the history of the site having been a seed farm. And when the Nature Conservancy bought the land, many invasive plants came in and colonized this particular pathway. And we're looking at it sort of as a pathway of stewardship or creating beauty in this particular pathway that leads from the Lichty Center itself to the pond, which is the place where we hope to put the bench in honor of our children and a place for sitting and being there in nature and watching butterflies, really, and watching pollinators. So it's about 200 to 300 meters. And we're going to try to restore that pathway so you can imagine it increasing the biological diversity of both native plants and then the pollinators that utilize the plants.
I like what you said there, a pathway of stewardship. That's a great, great title for it.
Thanks.
So what kind of plants are you guys putting out there? It's called Project Butterfly Way, so one would assume you're trying to attract lots of copious amounts of butterflies. Are there particular butterflies that you're looking at specifically on bringing into that portion of the Gila River Valley?
I could probably speak to that best. Actually, butterflies are the headline species, but there's so many other species we hope to attract as well.
Great.
All pollinators are having trouble. And a lot of that comes from how we've treated land over time. We do have a tendency to be at war with everything from microbes to insects to weeds. And a lot of the chemical things we've used in order to battle those various species are part and parcel to why pollinators are in such trouble. However, I think one of the beauties of this project, and especially in memory of Ella and Michael, is this is yet another gesture where we humans can go beyond doing things to damage plants and damage insects, but we're actually a species that will go out and do things for the benefit of others, and that's our hope here. When it comes to the plants, diversity is going to be one of the key things. A lot of studies have shown when it comes to bees or any pollinators, butterflies, birds, a diversity of plant species will be important. We do want to focus particularly on some of the milkweeds.
Yeah.
There are two butterflies that are certainly having a lot of trouble in our area. One is the monarch, which is a migratory butterfly species, which makes them unique in the butterfly world. The queen butterfly, which looks similar to the monarch in that it's orange and quite beautiful. I was at the river yesterday and saw several, and I was glad to see them. We're really concerned about the populations of both these species. These are butterflies that rely primarily on the milkweeds for reproduction. Without the milkweeds, we don't have those species. And this is just one example of many different species that rely on that relationship to plants. So our hope is to plant with a lot of diverse species. We want to really focus on plants that are already endemic to the Gila Valley and try to eradicate as many of the invasives as possible while restoring some of the plants that should be there. That's our hope.
What is the overall diversity of butterflies in New Mexico, and what do we know about them in general?
Well, in New Mexico, we have roughly 300 species of butterflies.
Wow.
It's actually over that. New Mexico is the a state with more butterflies than any other except Texas and Arizona.
Is that right?
I'm not sure what the Texas state list is, but Arizona has roughly 340 species, I think, and I believe our New Mexico list officially is somewhere around 315 or 20. A lot of different species. So statewide, those figures are not so meaningful. Right here in our area, my work on the Gila National Forest in the last couple decades has shown that we have 175 species here. And probably in the Gila Valley, where we're concentrating on this this particular project, we don't have a special list that we've made, but it's almost certainly around 150 different butterfly species.
So just
here.
About half of all the butterfly
that's
species
right.
in New Mexico are found here in the Gila River
exactly.
Valley.
Exactly. And it's similar with the birds, as you probably know. Yes.
So what do we know about them in general, about these 150 species of butterflies here in the Gila, besides their pollinating?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask that question. it's difficult. What do we know about them? There is a great deal that we know about them, but there is also a lot that we don't know about them. And we don't know why so many species are declining. It's easy to say why milkweed feeding butterflies are declining when milkweeds are being eradicated nationwide. But the decrease in numbers of butterflies, not only here, but nationwide, continent-wide, is another matter. We simply don't know why butterflies are in decline, but they are. Certainly pesticides the widespread use of pesticides is a big problem. Habitat destruction, any number of reasons. But we are experiencing a noticeable decline in butterfly numbers all over. It's not just here in the Gila region.
Yeah, it seems like habitat destruction is really quite a big problem that's not only affecting butterfly species, but all species.
All species, yes, of course.
So do we have any rare butterflies in our neck of the woods? And sort of a, kind of a follow-up to that, what's our most abundant butterfly?
So one of the two rarest species of all is Nokomis flitilleri and the Ursine giant skipper. The most abundant, I would have to say, is the cabbage white.
The cabbage white.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about those two rare species that you just said? And could you repeat their names again for our listeners?
Okay. So Nokomis flitilleri, it's quite rare because there was a known species up in the, where was it, Dale?
We had one population, small population here on the Gila National Forest in Grant County, and another larger population up near Willow Creek. Both of those appear to have been largely, if not entirely, eliminated.
Jeez.
It's a species that feeds on violets, on a certain species of violet. It's more or less a Mexican butterfly, but it's always been rare in New Mexico. There was a population in southern Arizona of the Mexican subspecies. A group of them colonized the area up around in the Santa Catalinas. But it was eliminated through the Forest Service manipulating the parking lots up there, unfortunately.
And what was the other rare butterfly that you mentioned, Raven?
So it was the Ursine giant skipper.
Giant skipper. And so I'm sort of curious, when we talk about rare species or like endangered species, do we have any sense of population numbers on these two different butterfly species that we just talked about?
I don't think so. No. No.
One of the ideas for the project is that we approach the planting and the restoration of this area as an experiment in itself, so that these experiments are going on all over the country where people are trying to promote pollinator gardens and pollinator areas. And so now we're taking that on too. And when we first decided to do it, we thought, well, what if it doesn't work? And what if we decide to make a garden, you know, a garden for our friends, and the garden doesn't work? And we had this sense of, oh, we can't take something on that's not going to be successful. And then we thought, well, the kids were involved in eco-monitoring and in being scientists, field scientists. So we thought, well, if we approach it as a science experiment and we keep data and we keep a record of what we plant and when we weed and when we water, then we'll be doing it in a way that is experimental, mm-hmm. and we can't fail. We can just change as we go. And so, and similarly, we thought, well, what's really known about butterflies? And when we realized that there was less known than we wanted to, you know, especially in the Gila Valley, that we could use the area as a way to enhance learning about pollinators and beginning to start to collect data on how many different pollinators there are in the area, and that anybody can be a part of that science and hope to create some sort of platform where we can do citizen science out there on the Gila.
That's fantastic, Patrice. You're listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with Dr. Dale Zimmerman, Professor Emeritus of Botany at Western New Mexico University, Raven Myers, a student of entomology, Mark Kentrell, owner of Lone Mountain Natives and Restoration, Carol Fugali, Project Manager for Butterflyways, a habitat enhancement project at the Gila River Farm in Cliff, New Mexico, and Patrice Muchnick, directing fundraising, raising awareness, and promoting conservation in memory of her daughter, Ella Jazz Kirk, as well as Ella Myers and Michael Mall. So we spent the first segment of the program talking about this Project Butterflyway, habitat restoration program, or project rather, and all the work that you guys are doing out in the Gila Cliff Valley, as well as the different types of butterfly species. And Patrice, the last thing that you touched on was these pollinator gardens across the country. It was sort of was like the example or the benchmark of what you guys were sort of looking to do or achieve. Can you give our listeners a sense of what these pollinator gardens were like across other parts of the country, how they've fared, if they're doing well? Do we know much about them? Sort of how did that, you know, when you were researching this and looking at those, what were some examples of other success stories across the country?
I'm going to let Mark answer that since he's the raising seeds and doing the soil work, the dirty work.
Sure. Yeah, actually, there's quite a bit of good current research that's been going on, and there's a lot of research that's gone on previously. Some early research in small patches of pollinator plants was done in California at various universities there. I really can't remember specifically where the research was done, but they found that there was significant difference in the amount of species coming to these pollinator patches and species found in the general area, even with plots that were as small as a quarter acre.
Oh, wow.
Currently, there is research being done all throughout the country. Recently, in Iowa State University, they've just completed some studies, 7 years of research looking at pollinator strips being incorporated into crops and crop rotations. They found with as much as 10% of farmland being devoted to pollinator strips adjacent to crops, they've been able to increase the nitrogen by 80%, phosphorus by 90%, and they were able to retain soil by just incorporating these pollinator strips, sometimes up to 90% of the normal washout from traditional farming techniques.
That's so significant.
Yeah, this is exciting for not only conservationists, but also for people in the agricultural industry. So there's a lot of research being done, and what they're finding is it doesn't necessarily take a huge amount of land. Being someone who grows and sells native plants, I truly believe you can do an awful lot, even in our own landscapes around our homes, right, businesses, and schools. I know, I think it was the year before last, we had a monarch lay eggs and young raised on just one single plant in our front yard. We have a variety of different milkweeds growing in our yard, and there's one particularly, Asclepias subverticillata. The common name for that would be horsetail milkweed. That's what we like to use when we're selling it. It's also known as poison milkweed because it is not something you want to plant around livestock.
Right.
So it should come with that warning. We found we don't sell it as well if we call it poison milkweed. So horsetail milkweed is a much friendlier name. But being one that is fairly high in the toxins that milkweeds carry, it is one that the butterflies, particularly the monarchs and queens, will choose. There's also a lot of great research in looking at how these insects choose plants, and sure enough, they do choose the plants with a higher, what we can think of as being a toxin.
Toxicity,
but to them, it's
yeah.
a beneficial chemical compound. And it is fascinating that these insects know the difference. But all it takes is one single plant. So in a lot of ways, we want to encourage people to be inspired by this project. And when they go out and view the plantings as they succeed over the years, hopefully it'll give people ideas about things they can plant in their own yards. One plant can make a difference.
That's great. And do we know of any other sort of like pollinator gardens in New Mexico or in the Gila region? Or is this kind of like a new sort of thing here? Because I had never really heard of this myself personally. And I work on wilderness. And, you know, when I was approached about doing this story with you guys, I was just like, wow, what a great concept. So did you find any other areas across New Mexico or any other, like, is there any research being done at like universities here in New Mexico?
I'm not aware of research being done. I know locally we have a couple gardens that we've planted over the years, the first one being at Jose Barrios Elementary School. We took a bare patch of ground and turned it into pollinator habitat, and sure enough, we built it and the pollinators came. At the Virginia Street Botanical Garden, there's a lot of work being done incorporating native plants there, particularly native plants that have been grown organically. And we recently put in a small butterfly patch, a pollinator patch, in memory again of Ella, and Michael. And this is something we hope to continue to develop and tend to over time. So there's no research being done on some of these small plots, but all you have to do is go and sit for a while, and you'll see there's quite a few species coming. So it's interesting.
Now, you mentioned the monarch butterfly. I'm curious, how does that butterfly species fit into the overall scheme, and what role does New Mexico play in the life history of the monarch butterfly?
Well, the monarch is, of course, widespread in North America. The New Mexico population is not large. in terms of the continental population. As it was mentioned earlier, it's one of our migratory butterflies, the main migratory butterfly. And the main mass of monarch butterflies winters in, well, central Mexico. And they're experiencing great problems down there through deforestation because of the elimination of the fir forests, these high-elevation fir forests, which are essential for their survival through the winter. And with the continued logging of these forests, reduction to just a few acres, the forests are subjected to environmental changes, temperature drops and that sort of thing that allow the butterflies to simply die. And there is not much habitat remaining for them on the wintering grounds. In addition to that, they're being hit hard up here on throughout their breeding areas, not only in New Mexico, but elsewhere across the country, because of the decimation of milkweed species. Milkweeds are in decline everywhere. People consider them weeds. As Mark mentioned, Asclepias subverticillata is called poison milkweed, and just having that name attached to it creates a lot of prejudices among the general populace. But New Mexico has not been one of the major areas for monarch butterflies. They've always been less common here than in some of the other states. Still, they migrate through here, or formerly did, by the thousands, and we would have hundreds of them. I have seen hundreds of monarch butterflies right along the main street here in Silver City during the southward migration. But we don't see that anymore. And for the last 2 years, I have not seen a single monarch butterfly on our property here in town, whereas formerly we'd have several hundred each year. There's still some around, of course, but the numbers have dropped precipitously.
So, Dale, you talked a little bit about the deforestation in Mexico. Do we know if anything's being done in the Mexican side to sort of protect their habitat and those trees?
There are things being done, but in a sense, it's a case of too little, too late. Mm. The Mexican government has paid some lip service to protecting these fir forests, but they're in remote areas, quite remote areas, and illegal logging continues to be a problem. And unfortunately, as monarchs decline up here, there are few monarchs to go south to winter down there. So there is less incentive for the locals to conserve their forests. Butterfly visitation, butterfly tourism has become a rather big thing. And a lot of people from Europe and from North America go to southern Mexico, despite the difficulties there, to see the wintering monarchs. But as the phenomenon becomes less and less spectacular, there's less reason for people to come, less reason to conserve the forest, so things are going from bad to worse, frankly.
And when is the migration of the monarch butterfly through New Mexico? Don't they travel like 3,000 miles or something like that from Canada all the way to Mexico every year?
Yes, they do. You see, some monarchs, when they come up out of Mexico, some of them will stop and breed here. As Mark mentioned, he's had one breeding out at his place there. We've had some right here in Silver City that lay their eggs on the milkweeds. The larvae hatch out, feed on the milkweeds. The adults survive and then fly on northward. We don't know how far because none of ours have been marked. But a lot of butterflies, a lot of monarchs have been marked with special wing tabs in various eastern, midwestern states. And those have been tracked all the way down to Michoacan in Mexico.
And again, what time of year is it when the monarchs are coming through New Mexico?
Well, we get a few coming through in the spring, coming northward. But the largest numbers are present in August and September.
Yeah, that's what I was going to think, because I tend to see, I think they're monarch butterflies. They might be the queen butterfly. I think you guys said they're very similar looking. What are the differences between the monarch butterfly and the queen butterfly, and how can you tell the difference?
Well, the queen butterfly is a lot smaller. The monarch is really much bigger, and there's a difference in the pattern. Like, the queen has more of a distinctive orange color. It's like really, really maroon, kind of like an orange, but then the monarch has this really bright orange, and it has these more white in its wings than the queen does. The queen has little tiny little specks in its wings.
So we have a small guidebook that I started to use with my daughter Ella Jazz. It's called the Conspicuous Butterflies of the Gila National Forest. Is that what it's called, Dale? Dale put it together with another person from Grant County, Cynthia Hunter, and that's how I started looking at butterflies with my daughter. And in it, there's 40 or 50 butterfly species. 50. And really, in a matter of a few years, we were able to see all 50 of these butterflies. And we're hoping that that's the kind of activity that young people, old people undertake, is to just go what we've been calling butterfly hunting. And you don't need much. You have this little guide and a pair of binoculars, and you can hunt butterflies. And it's fun. It's really fun, and it's such a beautiful activity. And for me, the butterfly represents both the strength of natural systems and the fragility of natural systems, because they occur in really in such abundance and such diversity that they really show an amazing adaptability. But on the other hand, they act many times as a keystone species, where if there's one plant that isn't present, then that can keep that particular species of butterfly from existing. So just sort of put that out there. It's not that hard to see many, many different kinds of butterflies. It doesn't take long to see dozens and dozens of different kinds of butterflies on one sunny day along the Gila.
And Patrice, just so our listeners know, where can they get some more information about all the work that you guys are doing?
Well, we do have a website out. It's called butterflywayproject.org, and that's all lowercase. And if anyone would like to, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but if anyone wants to come out and help or join us in any planting project, you can leave a message on that website, and we can get back to you.
That's butterflywayproject.org. You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with Dr. Dale Zimmerman, Professor Emeritus of Botany at Western New Mexico University, Raven Myers, student of entomology, Mark Cantrell, owner of Lone Mountain Natives and Restoration, Carol Fugali, project manager for Butterfly Way, a habitat enhancement and project at the Gila River Farm in Cliff, New Mexico, and Patrice Muchnick, directing fundraising, raising awareness, and promoting conservation in the memory of her daughter, Ella Jazz Kirk, as well as Ella Myers and Michael Mall. So, Carol, can you describe for us a little bit what's been happening so far with the Butterfly Way project and what has already been done?
Well, so far we've had two major efforts out there. The first occurred in February when a group of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders were out there, and we planted about 75 perennial plants. Wow. That we did obtain from Lone Mountain Natives. Initially, we had to prepare the site, which basically consisted of pulling out the invasives, which was mainly predominantly a horehound at that time. And that always is a challenge when you're trying to do a project like this.
Wait, what was the name of that invasive species?
Horehound.
Horehound.
And it looks like a mint, and it originally came from Asia and northern Africa. And out there in the Gila, where I live, just a quarter mile from the Nature Conservancy property where this project is taking place, I have seen the horehound really just take over areas in the last 15 years since I've been out there. And so extracting that non-native is imperative for not just this project, but for any other project that people want to do. So that was the first project we had in February. And then the end of May, we had friends and family of Ella, Ella, and Michael do another planting where they planted about 35 perennials along with 6 Mexican elderberry trees. So we just continue to water and to extract the non-native species. And the plants themselves are doing fabulous. They're growing, they're flowering, and it's just been a beautiful project.
And do you have any plans for more plantings in the near future?
Yeah, actually, one of the things that will happen next, hopefully come mid-July through August, we have a great window for seeding the area out. So we put a lot of plants in that are already adult and established plants. The next step would be to do seeding of a wide variety of different wildflower species. And we haven't set the exact dates on when the seeding will take place, but we'll want to get that news out. I imagine mid-July is what we're shooting for. Much of it is dependent on weather in the monsoon. Yeah. They're promising a strong monsoon and a lot of rain through the fall. So the hope is that that will coincide well with our planting schedule. And we'll probably schedule somewhat around that. But we're looking towards the mid-July. So if there's anybody out there who likes to pull weeds, they'll be more than welcome to come and assist with the project as we progress through it. And we'll be able to keep the schedule posted on the website to let people know if they do want to become involved.
And we did mention earlier, once again, if you do want to become involved in this project, you can go to the website, butterflywayproject.org, and there's places where you can leave a message, and we will get back with you on that.
So besides participating in some of these like plantings or pulling weeds, what can people also do now to sort of contribute or participate?
Since Nathan said that my title was fundraiser, I'm going to do that pitch right now. We were just blessed to have, I'm just going to give the figures because it's important for people to have a, really know what it costs to do something like this. Actually, we don't know what it's going to cost. But we were able to raise about $7,000 when people really didn't even know what we were going to spend the money on, just out of the heartfelt response to my daughter's efforts to take care of the Gila. And now that we have a specific project where we know we're going to create this, create a place of beauty and a place where people can go, we would like to raise a couple more $1,000 if you could help us. We don't need a lot, but we could use donations. And with the money, we'll be buying the plants, buying the seed, hiring some local people to do some tilling. We've even hired out once in a while for watering. And basically, we just need money to maintain it, not just through this year, but so that we can maintain the restoration efforts throughout a couple of years. Because if you plant a garden, you have to tend it. And if you restore an area, which is what we're trying to do, you have to have a concerted multi-year effort to bring back the native species and give them the best chance they can. So on the webpage, there's a donate site, and it will take you actually to another page where you can learn more about the work of Ella, preserving her efforts at activism with the Gila. And there's other pictures of the kids. You'll see some pictures of the milkweeds that we've planted and some of the planting parties that we've had. So if you can help us, we'd really appreciate it. We'll make sure we use the money wisely.
And that website, again, is butterflywayproject.org.
That's us.
So besides milkweed, we've talked a lot about that and its importance for monarchs and other butterflies. What other plants are critical and crucial to the survival and the restoration of these critical species, butterfly species?
Well, that's a big question. With each species, particularly with many of the butterflies, there are close relationships with specific plants. And it's not just the wildflowers, but also various trees, various shrubs. So the easy way to answer that is just to say to plant with a lot of diversity and to particularly focus on native species. There's a lot of study that's been done, particularly in the eastern United States, looking at the difference between native species and non-native flowering plants that are sometimes similar in characteristic. And they found overwhelmingly that you get a greater diversity of pollinators coming to plants that are indeed native to the area. That's not to say that there aren't certain species that aren't native that are very attractive to bees and other pollinators as well. We plan on putting quite a few plants out there. One, there's a plant called the Rocky Mountain bee plant. It's one of the cleomes, and it's one we want to plant in profusion out there in addition to many other of the typical roadside wildflowers that you see growing throughout the area. In addition to the wildflowers, again, we are going to be putting some trees and shrubs. Carol had mentioned that we planted some Mexican elders. They're not only a fantastic plant for a variety of different pollinators, but also the berries are fantastic for birds. So, again, it's a whole host of species we're hoping to plant for.
Can you tell them, Mark, just with the common names of the species we planted in March, just to put them out there?
Oh, sure. Well, we mentioned the milkweed. Some of the common milkweeds that people may be familiar with, there's a plant called butterfly weed, appropriately named. It's a beautiful orange-flowered milkweed. You can commonly see these if you're going up around Cherry Creek, towards the Cherry Creek campground along the roadside. Particularly through July, you'll see these in bloom. They're just an extraordinary plant and often covered with butterflies. There's another lesser-known milkweed that goes by the local name of Immortal or Antelope Horns, and it's a beautiful plant, almost otherworldly. When people see it in bloom, they just automatically stop and wonder, what is this amazing thing I'm seeing? It has a flower that basically comes out almost looking like a ball from outer space with greens and purples and a number of colors. It's just a beautiful plant, and again, a very important plant for some of the pollinators. It's hard to really focus on any other species just because there are so many species that are important. The buckwheats, anything with a flower is going to likely have benefit for a certain pollinator. I could go on and on with tree species, but that could take a great deal of show time. So.
I was thinking how one of the things was we were thinking about how to do other pollinators as well as butterflies. And just to let you know, we did think of other names, Lepidoptera lane, pollinator pathway place, but we did stick with the butterfly as the transformational symbol. But Raven has a great knowledge of all the different insects and other pollinators, so I wanted you to go ahead and tell people the kinds of things we might expect to see on some of the flowers. Sorry about that, Nathan.
Oh, there's the Coleoptera, which is the beetles. Some of the beetles are great pollinators. Some of the true flies are great pollinators. You see quite a bit of long-legged flies or different species of flies pollinating the flowers. And then lots of native bees and the general honeybees or killer bees on flowers. Or sometimes you'll have ants pollinating. Then actually some of the true bugs actually pollinate the flowers too, believe it or not.
And the hummingbirds.
And the hummingbirds, yes.
Now all these plants that you mentioned, are these available locally anywhere where people can purchase seeds?
Well, I happen to know someone who owns a nursery. And certainly Lone Mountain Natives, our nursery grows many of these plants. We sell them at the farmer's market every Saturday. There's another great guy named Gavin who grows plants that you'll meet at the farmer's market, who grows a lot of native species. And we certainly don't see him as competition, just somebody who's in collaboration getting these plants out there. Also, we don't have a store. We sell from our house. So if people give us a call or contact us through our website, it's easy for people to make an appointment.
Why don't you give us your website, Mark?
Okay. It's Lone Mountain, Lone, M-T-N, at Q.com.
Great.
All lowercase.
And one other avenue that folks might want to take, if you go to Bear Creek Herbs, NAVA does have some seed packets there that people can plant. They're just a small sampling of different pollinator species of seeds, and you can just go ahead and put that in your backyard garden, or if you want to go to Bear Creek Herbs to make a donation, that would be welcome as well.
originally the seeds that Nava has are not native, just to let you know. She has a pack of seeds that we call Eller's Butterfly Blend, and the reason we use it is because it's filled, it's zinnias and cosmos, and those were some of Ella's favorite flowers, and they attract an enormous amount of butterflies. And so we started raising money last year very quickly. We wanted to do something beautiful. We just wanted to do something beautiful. So I had a bunch of five-year-olds fill packets of seeds to sell, and we made a label that said Ella's Butterfly Blend, and it was filled with zinnias and cosmos. So we ended up using that money that we raised for this other project out in Gila. Of course, we're not planting zinnias out there, but we also have been making available small packets of milkweed seeds. So at Mark's place right now, he has hundreds of tiny milkweeds growing, and it's really a beautiful thing to see. And we have many seeds still available, and we'll keep making those milkweed seeds available so that people can plant them for themselves and I guess you could say spread the butterfly love.
Spread the butterfly love.
As a native plant guy, I could put in a plug for the zinnias and for the cosmos. Those are wonderful plants to put in along with the veggie garden and, of course, along with any variety of native plants. Many of the natives don't like the excess water that you may need for a veggie garden, but those are certainly plants that do wonderfully. And that's another opportunity to plug the importance of all these plants in
diversity,
attracting beneficial insects as well. The pollinators, and Raven had mentioned a variety of other species that come to these plants, and many of these are beneficial, and beneficial for veggie gardens as well. It's only a small minority of the insects that give all the others a bad name when they start competing with us for our vegetable crops. But if we plant with a lot of diversity, we're going to bring in a lot of beneficial insects as well.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with Dr. Dale Zimmerman, Professor Emeritus of Botany at Western New Mexico University, Raven Myers, student of entomology, Mark Cantrell, owner of Loam Mountain Natives, Carol Fugali, project manager for Butterfly Way, a habitat enhancement project at the Gila River Farm in Cliff, New Mexico, and Patrice Muchnick, directing fundraising, raising awareness, and promoting conservation in the memory of her daughter, Ella Jazz Kirk, as well as Ella Myers and Michael Mall. So we've spent this whole program talking about Project Butterfly Way and all the great stuff you guys are doing out in the Cliff Gila River Valley. One thing that we didn't get to earlier was I was curious about what types of butterflies overwinter in New Mexico, and also do we know much about how they, you know, when they lay their eggs, do they hang around for a while? Do they like leave right away? What's going on with all the different kinds of butterflies that we have here in regards to those two questions?
Well, there's two that overwinter, the morning cloak and the satyr comma. And what happens is they lay their eggs late, and so then the larvae, they kind of like overwinter, and they turn into butterflies. And that's what happens.
You answered it well. Go ahead, Dale.
Well, I'll just mention that those two butterflies that Raven named overwinter as adults. You sometimes see morning cloak butterflies flying around on warm January, February days, because even the adults overwinter. Now, that's very unusual. Most of our butterflies die at the end of the breeding season. And, of course, others like the monarch migrate out of here. So only a few overwinter as adults. But Raven mentioned earlier the Nokomis fritillary, one of our rarities. Those things overwinter as larvae. They overwinter in the larval stage on violets, on a certain species of violet. And the larvae are somehow adapted to surviving even our cold mountain winters here in New Mexico.
Now, the monarch butterfly, after it does this gigantic migration, you know, from Canada to Mexico, when it reaches Mexico, does it die there? Does it die? First it lays its eggs, it dies, and then the whole process just starts all over again. Is that right?
No. The adults that are wintering down there all come back into the United States. and disperse. They come across the border and disperse east and west, you know, up the Rocky Mountains, up the Mississippi Valley, everywhere.
You mean they live more than 1 year?
Yes, they live for a couple of years.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Whereas, you know, most of the butterflies last for a single season, and that's it.
But if they've been there a few years to Mexico and had a chance to do it many times, then they'd lay down and die.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's a lot of flying.
You know, this would be a good place to add another important thing when you think of butterfly or any kind of pollinator conservation. And when you're dealing with insects, there's many things that people don't consider. And one of those things is wintering habitat as well. It's obvious, I think, to put flowers out there for pollen and nectar collection, and even maybe lesser so, it's an important idea that people plant things as nursery plants for various insects, but also that habitat for different species in larval form or through metamorphosis or as adults and how they winter over. And there's an awful lot that can be done quite easily as far as that's concerned. Everything from not cutting back a lot of the plants too early in the winter, leaving hollow stem plants available for a variety of species, even taking an old log and drilling holes into it for various burrowing bee species can be very important. There's a whole list of things that can easily be done. Even dead wood and loose bark on a tree, that's where many of these species will winter over, including the mourning cloak that was mentioned. Very important to consider all aspects of habitat, not just the wildflowers, but other things that you prepare for.
Earlier in the program, you sort of talked about this project Butterfly Way as a experiment in a way. What kind of questions should we be asking about butterflies with your project, and what kind of things do you hope to learn from this project that you're doing out in the Cliff Valley?
Well, I have a feeling that we all have a slightly different way of thinking about that. First off, we don't have an inventory of which butterflies visit that part of the Gila. So we're hoping to just begin the basic process of sightings when you just occurrences. They're called occurrence. So as we get ourselves organized this fall and into the summer fall, we're hoping to have a list of butterflies, the guides to the butterfly there available for people. And when there's an occurrence that just when you see a two-tailed swallowtail or you see a queen or a viceroy that or a buckeye, that we're noting that species even has visited. And that's the first thing, is to just know what's occurring. Getting a handle on the numbers is much, much harder. Abundance is a much harder concept than just
occurrence.
Straight yeah. diversity. And I guess the other thing that comes to mind is the relationship between the plants. What do we see nectaring or feeding on which plants? And as students, as groups of students, these are really excellent learning opportunities for just observation of the interactions and interrelationships between our native plant communities and our pollinators.
And I would like to note that anytime somebody is doing this kind of an inventory, it takes multiple visits and multiple sightings and information. And so the more people that get out there, the more school groups that are out there taking down this information, then you can compile a level of information that can be significant to the Valley. And as we mentioned earlier, it's an experiment to engage young scientists in the study of pollinators, the native plants, and their interactions they provide in our natural communities. And for some students, this might just start as this initial project for inventorying butterflies, but it could segue into something much larger. They might get interested in other types of pollinators, the plants, the river corridor, the birds, and it could be a springboard for a number of students.
And so I'm sort of curious also, what is the long-range sort of thinking on this type of restoration project? And you talked about going back and monitoring and planting and pulling weeds. Are there other things that you're looking to do in the longer term?
Well, I'll give my last piece in terms of my idea, and then maybe anybody else who has an idea. One other aspect is we do plan to put just a commemorative space out on the pond for Ella and Michael. So we will have some interpretive information about the corridor and what our objectives are and what our purpose is in creating this type of diversity and lasting beauty. So we're going to do some sort of dedication for the site in October, where we bring people out to gather together there and see what we've done. But we hope that by increasing the number of native plants in this pathway, in this one stewardship pathway, that will increase the seed bank, and this will spread to other parts of the Gila River farm, because that's not the only 300 meters of the area that's covered in invasives. So we just picked an area and then hoped that as the seed bank gets stronger, that will push into some of the areas naturally.
Another thing we can do is think in terms of just the project, as it's a 3-year initial step into developing something that we hope is going to be self-sustaining. We want to have plants and things developed that aren't going to take much in the way of human intervention, little in the way of watering. There will have to be some of that work done at the front end in order to get things established.
Right.
But ultimately, we want a very low management system built in place. We may have to periodically do a mowing every possibly 2 years, but these are questions that we really can't answer until we get further into the project. 3 years down the road, the success of the project will guide us in what decisions we'll make in the future. So we have our initial phase and then things that are coming in the future.
And that's the difference for me between a garden and a restoration. As a garden, you have to maintain,
mm-hmm.
and restoring something to its natural state gives the opportunity for it to be self-sustaining.
So we've been talking with folks with the Project Butterfly Way, which is a habitat restoration project along the riverine corridor of the Gila River in southwestern New Mexico, promoting an increase in the diversity of native plant hosts for butterflies, birds, bees, and other pollinators. Their objective is to create lasting beauty by increasing floral and faunal diversity, improving critical habitat for sustaining monarch butterfly populations, and providing a place for research and study of the role of pollinators and their native plant hosts. We've only got about 2 minutes left in the program. Is there anything else that you want our listeners to be aware of? Plug a website again, any other important dates of things happening before we sign off for the rest of the day?
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Zimmerman for participating in the project. When we first went out to the site, we've always had an interest in this place, and Dale and I and Mark and Carol and some of the other people who live there, we've always had an interest in restoring the natural beauty. And when we came together to think about what to do on behalf of Ella and Michael, the idea came naturally to us that we should restore an area that they loved. And I really appreciate Dr. Zimmerman helping with that, with his expertise and his dedication to this sort of project where we take on something scientific, but we do it with love as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for me, and to Carol and to Mark for helping, and Raven for being our student guide in entomology. So if you can help us out, we'd really appreciate it.
Again, that website is butterflywayproject.org. Thank you so much, Dale, Raven, Mark, Carol, and Patrice. It's been a real treat to talk with you guys today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many thanks also to Kyle Johnson, our technical engineer and all-around radio guru. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for your community support and dedication. You can tune in to Earth Matters every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. on 89.1 FM, as well as listen to podcasts of each show on gmcr.org. This is what community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a fantastic day, everyone.